Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer.
All right. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Doug. How are you doing?
Doing great. Hey,
here we are. Take three.
Yeah, take three, episode five.
There we go.
Bring it. So, good day.
It was all right day.
Yeah, relaxing. You mentioned you had a trip to the post office.
The post office was not my favorite part of the day, and we'll just leave it at that. How's your vacation been? How's your Christmas?
It's been great. Working on a kitchen remodel.
I caught up. That's right. I saw pictures. How's that coming along?
It's going good. Things are coming back together. So I don't think I'll have it finished before vacation's up, but I'm in good shape. I'll get to a point where we have to finish off.
Are you able to use the kitchen? Can you make food in there? Can you eat in there?
Yeah. We're doing little bits at a time. There will be a point in time where we won't be able to, but we're not at that point right now.
Right. When we did ours, we were out for about a month and we were eating a lot of pizza and cooking a lot of things on a hot plate.
We're doing it in three phases, and I'm doing it myself, no contractors and stuff like that. So we can just kind of pick and choose what we're doing and sort of plan. Okay, now we're going to be out of the stove and microwave or whatever.
Got it.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's a weird time to do it because it's like the holidays are when you need the kitchen the most, but it's also when you have the most time to work on projects like that.
Yeah. Well, we're adding in a bar into a cabinet area where there was no water or plumbing or anything before. And,
oh, okay.
We had just started remodeling and I tore off some old tile and I made by accident, I got a hole in the sheetrock in the backsplash.
Whoops.
And yeah, no big. And, but I happened to notice that there was water in a drain behind there. And so our scope of work increased to add a water supply and drain to that area and add a bar sink. So
cool. So what are we talking about today, Doug?
I think we were looking at something along the lines of reamping and how to get creative with some dry signal from various instruments and possibly moving into an area of samples and kind of like resampling or...
Oh, yeah.
It's an analog to MIDI converter. And when you play an analog signal, maybe a snare drum, and it will pick up on that analog signal and make that a trigger. And then you can configure that to map to a MIDI port and have like a drum attached to that.
Okay.
So you have a kick that's triggering a sample and the sample of another kick that you like. And then you can, you could replace or you could blend or whatever. So I thought we could maybe get into talking about how I do that. And
yeah, that's very cool.
If you do anything like that, certainly we could look at differences and or similarities. And I know you and I use different DAWs. So something along that line, I think.
Yeah, that sounds very cool. We did have one feedback from a listener who suggested that we perhaps define our terms a little more often because I think that we know what we're talking about. And once in a while, we throw out a term like reamping, which we think is a standard that not everybody knows what it is. So when you play a guitar signal through an amplifier, that's just what everybody expects. But there's this process in the studio called reamping where you can take a signal and the traditional way is to put it out into another amplifier and get a different sound out of it. And kind of what we do in the box a lot is to record a guitar signal into the computer and then run it through a, an amplifier simulator or an amp sim and sometimes a cab sim or a cabinet simulator to get a real sound. And I don't know, Doug, would you call that reamping? If it's really from a bare guitar signal into your computer, because originally reamping is, you record your guitar probably through an amplifier, through a microphone to tape. And then if you didn't like it, you might throw it back out and then record it coming out of another amplifier to get a slightly different sound. But in the box, it's really just your guitar signal. And then you're putting it through whichever amplifier simulator you put on the track.
Yeah, I would call it reamping. I have done that process with a non-DI signal as well. So coming from a microphone.
Right.
From a Marshall cabinet and then, record that and then send that back out in a line to another amplifier and re-record that. Or you can, as you mentioned, in the box. So I think another thing is we throw around terms like DI.
Right.
And a DI is something that's kind of integral into reamping.
Yeah, because, I think we touched on that a little bit last time.
Yeah, we did.
It wouldn't hurt to talk about it again.
Sure.
In case people are hitting this for the first time.
Right.
What a DI, direct input or direct inject.
Right. And that's a in most cases is a dry signal coming from guitar. And there's DI boxes and where you can have a signal coming from a microphone go into the DI box, and that microphone signal comes to the mixer board. And then the guitar is also plugged in to a line into that DI box, and a dry signal from the guitar comes at the same time, and you can pipe that into a second track. So you've got a dry guitar and a wet guitar signal coming from the amplifier at the same time. So then I really like doing that because that gives me opportunities to do more with the guitar track later.
Right. And wet meaning affected, like it's not just the straight signal. It's got, you know, distortion on it or reverb or whatever pedals it's going through.
Yeah. And the other cool thing about that is by getting the signal from the same source at the same time, but in a wet and dry type of set of tracks, you're not going to run into phase issues because you've got a completely different signal being passed in from the dry signal versus the wet signal.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And you can, rather than taking two takes to play the same thing and pan left, pan right, you can do this in one take and then reamp the second signal however you want. So maybe you want more of a clean guitar on a second track that blends in with the heavy guitar track to give it a little bit more clarity or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things you can do that it's just something that gives you so many options later. It can also save you if you realize that there's something horribly wrong with the other guitar track that came in from the wet signal that you can't.
Like it was clipping, for instance.
Yeah, you can't repair it. There's something bad that happened, but you still have that original dry signal that you got, and you can completely recreate that. You could actually send it back through the original amplifier again and bring the preamp down a little bit on it so it wasn't clipping, and correct that situation with the original guitar track. So it would still be the original guitarist playing, provided you still have that amp or they were using your amp in your studio. It would be exactly the same, but corrected. Really a good thing to do.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, collection of stems that you get when you're going to mix, where a DI, like a clean guitar, is included in case you need to use that either to correct something, or I've actually seen there's a great trick you can do in mixing, and not that everybody wants to know about mixing, but if you have the clean guitar track and you have the distorted guitar track, like they've printed the effects and you're not going to touch it, but sometimes you can't tell in a distorted guitar track's waveform where the note begins because there's so much distortion. You can't tell where the you can't find out where the transient is. And if you have the clean waveform, the clean guitar track, you can line up that clean guitar track, even if you're not going to use it in the mix, with the distorted guitar track, and you can see the transient, so you know where to cut or you know where the note begins.
That's a good idea. That's
a good way to find the transient in a very distorted guitar track with a waveform. It's just a bunch of, just like a mush of peaks.
Yeah. So how many uses for a DI reamp signal can you come up with?
Well, you mentioned one. Well, I just mentioned one. So that's one. Two is what you said, which is to run it opposite the original, but through a different amp sim.
Yeah.
Or a different signal.
Now, oftentimes, it's not necessarily, well, I consider this reamping too, but I work with bass players who normally don't play through an amp during the recording. They just go DI. Yeah. Or if they bring their amp, they just do a direct out from the back of their amplifier.
That's cool.
Sometimes I'll record them the amp as well, but 95% of the time, we're just DI on bass. And I have some cool plugins for bass. And I have like Guild Hartke cabinets and amplifiers for bass guitar and stuff like that are all in the box.
I love their amplifiers, by the way.
I do too.
GK.
And I don't have so much of that type of thing for regular guitars because most of the time I'm recording from an amplifier, from a microphone, and then do a DI signal along with that. But with bass guitar, it's completely DI most of the time.
Yeah, I think that's common with bass because the signal is so fat and so thick, and it doesn't necessarily translate that well to recording the amped signal, although a common trick is to have both. You have the DI, and you kind of use the low end of the DI, and then you use like the mid and upper of the amped signal, and you blend those together into a bus and get the full range and feeling of it.
So with that, you know, with that in mind, there's a lot that I do with bass, and I usually will always keep that original signal and blend it in with the reamp signal with the bass guitar, because that gives this a full, and I like the sound of it. That's why I do it.
I do too. And I get the DI and I get the amped, and I almost always favor the DI in a blend. I always blend the two together, but the DI almost always sounds better. It almost always sounds more like the bass than whatever the amplified.
Yeah. Because the one that I reamp, I usually give it some, I'll overdrive it a little bit, or I'll give it some saturation. I'll do something to make it a lot different and blend that together to give it some edge, you know? And
right.
That's also a genre specific type of.
That's thing true. Well, I mix a lot of rock and heavy rock, and that's something that I do a lot as well. As far as going back to the uses, I thought of one more. I have done that before with a clean guitar, mixed, like compressed and mixed underneath a heavy guitar to just kind of fill it out. Especially if the wet guitar track is a little too, you know, high, mid, high, you know, sometimes it's nice to have the clean one to kind of fill out the mids, but it's very less common with a guitar track than it is with a bass track.
So I'm kind of curious, probably going to require some name dropping, but what type of in the box guitar amplification plugins do you use?
I have probably more than I will ever need. It's, you know how, you know how guitarists are, always searching for that tone, the tone, capital T, capital T. Well, I'm always kind of like looking for new amp sims. I spent a lot of time using Line 6's Pod Farm 2, and I still use that once in a while. It's not the most authentic, but it does sound good in a mix. The Lapu plugins, which are free and they sound amazing, are also go-tos. Lately, I've been using, and I don't know if I mentioned this in our favorite plugins initial podcast, but there's this kind of renegade, not really renegade, but I think of them as kind of like this rebellious renegade plugin company out of Mexico City, Mexico, called Audio Assault. And they kind of started out just like with these free plugins that were like just distortion plugins, and then they kind of moved into amplifier plugins. Now they have a whole suite of everything that everybody else has, which is, you know, EQ and, you know, console and all this stuff, but their guitar plugins are really good. Audio Assault, my favorite one right now is called the Dominator, and the thing about them is that their plugins, they go on sale all the time for $5. So it's really hard, even if you don't care that much, it's hard not to go, okay, I'll try it for $5. But some of them are actually quite excellent. So
I only have a couple that I've used. One of them is Emissary from Ignite Audio.
Oh, I have that. Yeah,
and
the Ignite plugins are good.
It was free at the time that I got it. I don't know if it still is.
They have some free ones, yes.
I really like it. And then I'm a really big fan of, correct me if I'm wrong on this, is it Blue Cat or Bad Cat?
Blue Cat. Yeah, yeah. Blue Cat. They do have, Blue Cat has an amp sim that I downloaded, and I can't say that I've used that one.
I tell you, I use that for so much more than guitar.
All right, I'll make a note of it to try that one out in my next mix. There is
so much going on in that plugin set. Let me tell you, phasers and, I mean, everything. It's awesome. So
yeah, the Blue Cat, is that still a free collection? The phaser, the EQ, the...
Yeah.
And I believe that their basic guitar simulator is also free. They have a paid suite, you know, like an upgrade suite. Like, hey, if you like the free ones, you'll like these ones better, which is kind of definitely a common model of
great company. They got a ton of stuff. The stuff that they do give away is like fantastic. I have a practice setup, so when I'm doing just silent practice,
right,
I'm using a Blue Cat setup. So,
oh, nice.
I really like, that's my favorite one.
Are they, correct me if I'm wrong, are they an Australian company?
That I don't know. Good question.
For some reason, I think
I know they're really responsive on Twitter. They interact, and if you mention them, they'll like what you had to say, or they might even contribute, you know? So
that's always cool when companies that you like and respect and use their product actually do respond on social media.
Yeah.
CD Baby actually is one of those.
Yeah.
I find the, and Isotope sometimes.
Sure. Is real active. They'll come and talk to you.
So yeah, they're pretty active.
Yeah.
Now, you asked about guitar sims. Now, bass sims, yeah. I do have a GK simulator I like a lot.
Oh, I have one too.
I think that was one of those. I have a lot of plugins that were either free for a limited time or like on special or whatever. Because I try not to spend a lot of money on plugins because I already have more than I ever need. I try not to spend money on them, so I still am a sucker for the free ones. That's where I'm going with that. If they're free or super cheap, then I'm not really violating my don't buy any new plugins, right? Right?
You're right.
Tell me I'm right.
As we go back to episode 1 to verify that.
Right. But yeah, I definitely have a slew. I don't have as many bass ones as I do the guitar ones, of course, but the DI sounds usually way better than, you know, take DI yeah. and throw our bass on it or whatever and sidechain it to a little bit of distortion from, you know, sound toys or whatever, and you're good. You don't really need a lot on a bass.
Yeah. For bass, I use Two Notes audio plugins.
Oh, I don't know that one.
They're fantastic, and it's high-end stuff. Although, to go out and purchase, you can go buy microphones and cabinets and amplifiers and add those in. They've got like a virtual shop that's within the plugin.
So okay.
It's nice. So I just have what I need in there and what I normally use, and I haven't spent too much on it. The actual plugin itself was free, and they give you a couple nice things to start with. And it's really, when you find something that you need, it's they're affordable. So it's not really expensive to, you know, grab a cabinet if you need one or whatever. And they sound fantastic. But
that's cool.
I don't use that for guitar, though. They have a ton of it for guitar and stuff. I just haven't gotten into it. But I found it invaluable for all the bass tones that I like.
Nice. That's another common model. So you have the first model, which is, here's this free plugin. Check out our upgraded pro version, or check out our other plugins that you pay for. And then there's the other model, which is like that Amplitube and GarageBand. Like, hey, here's our fully functional bass level. If you want more, there are in-app purchases, and you can upgrade within the application or whatever.
Yeah, that one works for me. I recommend it. We should get, like, maybe in post, we can get like a clown horn. So anytime that we mention a brand or, you know.
Right.
Wah, wah. Yeah.
The one thing that I want to say about in-the-box guitar plugins, I don't find this to be true as much with bass. But with guitar, the guitar simulators, as hard as they try and as well as they do, to me, to my ears, there's always kind of like this kind of digital painful fuzz that I like to round out with some, some tape sim to kind of take the edge off to make it sound a little better, because it doesn't ever quite sound as good as real analog recorded to tape from an SM57 through a console. And yeah. Of course, how could it? But they get close and they try, but I do like to, on my guitar bus at the end, I put, you know, Kramer tape or something to just kind of take some of that digital edge off and make it sound a little more real.
All right, so you shared a tip. I'll share one. The way, I don't have that same plugin, but what I do is I have a limiter that has a tube setting on it.
Oh, nice.
And I will set the limiter with no limiting threshold. So it's not actually limiting, but I'm just adding in the tube.
Okay.
And I get an analog quality to the recording just by adding that. But it's one of the limiters that I use that has a tube setting on it, and I really like it. So for the same exact purpose.
Which one is that? I wonder if it's one that I have.
Yeah, that's an Isotope one.
Okay.
Out of the Ozone Suite. It's the vintage limiter.
Oh, okay. So that's in the Isotope Advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. That's kind of like two solutions to the same problem. And that was kind of a game changer for me, because I'd spent so long trying to make in-the-box guitar recordings not just sound good and authentic, but just sound good, like not painful. Like, okay, you can take your EQ and do the whole sweep and pull and take out, you know, 2400K, you know, 7 dB or whatever. But I found that it was slapping a, you know, tape simulator on this guitar bus just kind of gives it a nice little mellow roundness that makes you go, oh, that's better.
And I should say, in both cases, so just for those listeners who are going, what the heck? The tape simulator is a plugin, and it's one that you could put right on the track and as an effects on the track, or you could also put it on your master bus if you wanted. You know, it depends what you're trying to do. With the limiter that I was discussing, that's also a plugin. It as well can go as an effect directly on the track or into your master bus.
Yeah, the thing I found that, and I don't know if this is true of all of them, but Kramer tape, which I love, but if you use too many of them in a particular mix, it will add more noise than you probably wanted. There's a cumulative noise effect in the end, and you're like, what is that hiss? Where is that coming from? Oh, it's from the fact that I have 12 Kramer tapes running.
How's it do as far as CPU is concerned? That's something
I used to have trouble with it a couple of laptops ago, but I don't anymore.
I'm kind of sensitive to that. I mean, I have 32 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
And I've got an i7 processor. It's 3.4 gigahertz. And if I run Neutron doing a mix on all my tracks to use the EQ, if I just wanted to use the Neutron EQ across tracks.
I still haven't used Neutron. Man, I have had that for a year.
Yeah. I don't think it's that great as far as CPU usage is concerned. I have troubles with it sometimes. So I have to use it sparingly. It usually ends up on my instrument group buses, but I'll use it until I start noticing I'm having problems. There's some other ones that if I start adding in from iZotope that I do find they're resource hogs.
Oh, that's interesting.
So oftentimes, even if I'd like to use them, because I'm familiar with or whatever, if it's a large mix, I have to make different decisions on what I'm going to use.
I think that's okay. I you know, God, I'm going to regret saying this, but it's been a while since I've had CPU issues in Logic. And I don't know if that was a OS version thing or a CPU version thing, or I trained myself not to use the problematic plugins, but it has been a while.
I've narrowed it down to plugins. I mean, I can swap them out with something with a different plugin that does the same thing for me, and the problem goes away. So it's definitely a plugin resource usage that occurs when I'm using them across many tracks.
Yeah. Now, speaking of limitations, I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned, which was that when you have a clean DI, let's say a client comes to you, the clean DI, I don't know if this has happened to you, they don't include a wet track and say, this is what we want it to sound like. But I think that there is an issue with people like not making decisions up front and not saying, hey, I need the guitar. Here's the guitar track. It is what it sounds like. But saying, here is what I want it to sound like. Come up with something. Where I'm going with this is simply that having the ability to not just drag in your own Marshall amp into the studio, record it the way you record it in the rehearsal studio or in your house or whatever, but to have a thousand different plugins that you can choose from. I think that there is that whole decision fatigue thing that sets in when you don't make that decision up front as to how things are going to sound or how you want them to sound, and either leaving it up to the mixer, which is problematic, or just not deciding up front. So I think that there is that kind of having the ability to do that is nice, but it's not always a good thing. Sometimes creativity thrives when you have stronger boundaries and stronger parameters.
Yeah. You know, when that happens, that defines the role of producer to me.
True.
Okay. And at that time, then I'm probably getting paid to be a producer for them. Because if I receive something and they ask me to do that, then I'm going to bill them accordingly to do that work, first of all, because that's more than just mixing. That's now I'm producing it and I'm making decisions on.
Right. You're making creative choices on behalf of the band. And that's a big difference.
You know, and not that I'm not doing that while I'm just mixing. I'm still making creative choices and I'm doing things that sound good to my ear and I'm making decisions.
Of course.
But that's more. I'm actually involved in the guitar's tone.
Defining the sound of the band is a different thing than defining the sound of the mix of the song.
In that case, they've come and asked me to do that because they're familiar with what I do and the sound of the things that I've done. And it's not that they're saying, here, we want this to be like something that they have heard before. They're asking me to do something that they have heard me do before.
I see.
You know what I mean? And so they're asking that of me. And that's about something how I do it. And that's not hard because that's like asking any musician that you know to play with you because you like the way they play.
True.
You know? So if they came and said, it would be hard because I would need to sit with them and produce together if it wasn't something I was familiar with. And that would be fine, too. We could certainly do that.
But you kind of want to know that up front, though, right? Not in the heat of now you're not only mixing, hey, we want you to come up with a guitar sound.
Yeah, that's the role of producer to me.
Right.
And that's how I define that. You know, I don't want to get on a whole tangent here, but I think the word producer is completely misused and bastardized today.
Okay. I agree.
And it makes people not even really understand what the role of a producer actually is. And if you say that you're a mix engineer, then automatically that's also synonymous with being a producer. And in my opinion, it's not. Okay.
The lines have blurred quite a bit because there's an expectation that mixers will bring a level of creativity to a mix and not just get the balances.
Sure.
So there is a bit of production choices. I mean, I don't know of a mix that I've done where I haven't brought something to it. I mean, I haven't lately added things like, you know, when I'm involved in the song creation, I feel free to do some arrangement or to bring in cymbals that weren't there or rearrange guitar parts, perhaps, if that's part of the song. I did some of this stuff on the Answer Is None album, but I was, you know, I was helping write the songs. I haven't done that for anything that people brought me just to mix, apart from, you know, you do make some creative choices like, oh, hey, let's swell this here. Let's make a dropout here and let's, you know, cut the bass here so that it's just the drums. And those are mixing choices, but they're also borderline production choices because you're changing the song sound.
If you're telling someone else who's playing that to drop this out here and then you want to, you know, increase the level and the dynamics as you come into this next section and you're basically telling them how this should play out, then you are producing them.
Yes, okay? I agree.
And that should come along. In my opinion, that should come along with the price tag of a producer fee. So,
yeah. And what I hear lately is like people talk about producer versus traditional producer. And producer now is often somebody who's a beat maker because they make the beat and the beat is the bed of the song and people sing over that or rap over that.
Yeah.
And a traditional producer comes in a studio or sits with a band and helps craft the song and say, no, you know what? Let's do a bridge here. Oh, let's change the key to this. Here, you know what? I'm going to play tabla on this while you do this part. And that's the role of a traditional producer. That's a whole different ball of wax. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. I was just looking for a video of Steve Vai.
Oh yeah.
And he was in the studio and he was just being a guitar player. He was not taking on any role other than playing music in the studio and playing what he felt needed to be played in the song. And I can't remember the name of the producer that was with him.
Was it Ted Templeman?
No, it wasn't. I'm not going to remember it right now, but Steve was like, please, I want you to produce me. And what that meant to him was that he was going to get direction as to what the phrasing was going to be like and what the tone should be like and how, you know, is this a fast section or a slow section? And you know, how rhythmic do we want to have this or do we want to go way outside? And so he's opening himself up to direction. Mm-hmm. You know, he's asking to be produced in that video, you know, and that to me was that's exactly what a producer is.
Right.
You know, and I don't really accept any other definition of a producer. Okay.
I hear you. And I understand that. And I think that not everybody is a Steve Vai level. Hey, produce me. Tell me what to play here. Tell me where to go slow, where to go fast, as opposed to, you know.
Well, he's playing on somebody else's record.
Right.
You know, so he needs to, you know, I guess maybe the thing is a lot of people are they're producing themselves.
Right. I would say just about everybody we encounter online is producing themselves. They're all, you know, they wear all the hats. And this is part of the problem. We probably should just have an episode about production in terms of being in terms of how to produce a song.
I think it'd be good and important to identify when you are being what role. what am I, you know, to ask yourself, what am I doing in this moment right now? You know,
that's something that I learned early on that I'm so glad I did. And I preach that to people, which is that you have to understand that you're wearing multiple hats and you have to know when to take one hat off and put the other hat on.
Yeah.
The biggest one is when you're songwriting, and boy, we're way down the rabbit hole now, but when you're songwriting, you have to tell the critic in yourself, your own critic, the one who sits on your shoulder and tells you, nope, nope, not that word. Nope, nope, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
They have to wait outside the room while you're creating, because creating is one thing and editing is another. If you're a writer, you tell your editor to just wait outside while you write. If
yeah.
you're a songwriter, you tell the editor, the critic, to stand outside while you finish creating. Because creating is creating and editing is editing. And those are completely different hats and they are opposites. They're the yin and yang of creation.
What do you do when you have creative ideas while you're editing? Because you're editing, you know?
You put them on a notepad.
Yeah. How do you preserve that moment, though? I mean, in any way that you can?
In any way that you can. Absolutely. If you ever want to know what a producer does, go watch a video of Tim Pierce. Tim Pierce,
love that guy.
Like one of
love
the greatest
guy.
Guitarists that half the people in the world don't even know who he yeah. is, has played guitar solos on every song you've ever heard.
Yeah.
He's
got more studio sessions than anybody.
Yes, he is
ever.
A consummate studio professional. And
yeah.
boy, he's got such a great attitude and a smile and he's such a great teacher. But humble as hell. He just yeah. walks in and just takes direction well and does. Yeah, if you ever want to know what a good studio musician, how they conduct themselves and how they perform and what a producer does on the other side, go watch a video of yeah. Tim Pierce.
I had the opportunity. I attended one of his master classes
nice.
A year and a half ago, and I had a short opportunity to meet him in the hallway
beautiful.
After. And what a nice guy. I really enjoyed that experience.
Yeah, that just comes through in all of his videos, how just what a nice guy he is.
Yeah, he's got his videos. He's got a lot of cool people that he's jamming with. And I would definitely
absolutely.
Recommend his channel to anybody.
Yeah, I definitely subscribe. I subscribe to his newsletter and his channel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to have time to talk about drum resampling today.
Yeah. So
unless we want to make that a part two, we can continue.
Nah, it's okay. I just, I think I'll leave it open. So any of our listeners who might be interested in how you can go about drum sampling, how do you add a drum sample to your track that might either add, you know, blend in with or replace one of the drums in the kit? It's something you could certainly do. If you have questions about that, why don't you respond to this podcast, either, you know, to one of us on Twitter or on our website at indiemusiccast.com. And we would be happy to go into further detail on sampling and replacing. It's usually working with drums. You'll find this most often. It's probably
yeah, it's
the
very
most common,
common
thing. So if you've got
questions
almost
about
too
that, common.
Yeah, I'd love to I'd love to continue that conversation. And it'd be a good thing if we could do that out in Twitter or in the comments on our website or something like that.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind bringing that up on our next podcast or in a future podcast.
Sure. I tell you what, why don't we, I will bring that up not this Sunday, but the following Sunday from this episode. I will bring that up in the audio mix chat on Twitter.
Sounds good.
So I guess that's all I have for now. That was a good one. I like this conversation.
I like this conversation too. I don't mind going down the rabbit holes as long as they relate back to the original topic and don't go too far away, because all of this is good stuff. And
yeah. It's always good when you have more material than you can finish up with. So.
Totally agree.
Versus the converse of that.
Right.
A short evening.
Right.
All right. Well, hey, until next time.
Yeah. Thanks, Doug. It's
yeah,
good talking
thanks,
to you.
Thanks, Matt.
As always, enjoy
I'll
the rest
you
of
later.
Your holiday break.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.